You're listening to Hooked on Startups, where every week you'll hear from some of the most talented, inspiring, and successful entrepreneurs who share their real-life stories, how they overcame challenges and failures, and how they mastered success. Get ready for some of the best business tips, tricks and tactics, and some frank, unscripted discussions. Here's your host, Matthew Sullivan.
There you go. So to maintain as much innovation and, what's the word, spontaneity as possible.
Yeah, there you go.
That's right, yes, I pressed the record button. I mean, it's just the little pleasures in life.
Right.
That sort of keep us going. But, you know, I'm delighted to welcome Shane Foss, who is the founder, CEO of Hooray Health, which is a fantastic name, you know, because... Yeah, you know, normally you only go to the doctor when you're ill. So this is like, hooray, I'm going to the doctor.
Right, exactly. Well, you know, we say it's a healthcare worth cheering about, right?
Yes. So. Well, which is great. And again, so as you can tell from my deep Southern accent, you know, I'm not from these parts. And I cannot begin to explain just how complicated the US healthcare system is. Now, it's all right for you lot because you were born into it. And so you sort of over a period of years through a process of attrition and osmosis, you have been brought up to sort of have some understanding. But for us poor folk who are looking at it from a distance, it is about as impenetrable as a impenetrable thing.
I think that's the best descriptive I've heard of it, right? Impenetrable. We were talking about it today as a team, our provider network team, and we were laughing because we all struggle, even though we're in this space, we still struggle with healthcare one way or the other. And it's just, it's a shame. And the person that figures out the coordination of care is going to be, you know, that's going to be the $1 trillion business in the United States. Because it is
embroiled with economics and health. So you've got these two potential polar opposites, haven't you? You've got, you know, it's a marketplace where it's driven by economics, yet at the same time, it's supposed to be a profession where people do it for the love of it. And at the same time, it's embroiled and laced with politics. And then you have sort of big pharma on this side as well. So it's an enormous machine. And so I think it must have been quite a decision to try and start unraveling, you know, some of the mysteries and delivering something which is as straightforward as what you've done.
Well, you know, when Hooray Health, when we started, I think any entrepreneur, when you're evaluating whether you're going to start a company or not, especially one as challenging as healthcare, you know, you've got to look for the opportunity and you got to look for the little wins. And so we identified a part of the market where you have a group of individuals that do not have access to healthcare, that are uninsured. And what we did was, we really broke it down to the simplest need of what that population wanted. You know, they're not looking at, you know, hey, I'm going in for my, you know, my butt lift or my facelift. They're not looking for anything. You know what they want? They're sick. They want to have access to an urgent care or a physician. They want to get medication that they can afford. They want to get better and they want to go to work because they can't miss work. And so our health system, as it is today, is, you know, like you said, it's very convoluted. There's malaligned incentives that drive people out of the market. You know, even people with health insurance are, you know, they're frustrated. They're like, look, if I'm dying, I'm going to the hospital because I know, look, at that point I've got to. But unless I'm dying, I'm not going because I know I'm going to have some crazy bill that, you know, my insurance company is going to say, you know what? You're responsible for it. We're not. And you got to pay it.
And it's absolutely true because you cannot think anything other than that unless you've got some kind of coverage through your employer where you don't really see what happens and you know you can go in. So, I wouldn't say audience, I say the group of underserved people that you provide these unique services to. I mean, describe them more because I know that it's typically the self-employed people. It's the explain who you
sure,
it's, who that niche is. If it's,
yeah,
it's
so
more
the,
than a niche, though.
Yeah, it's well, and it keeps expanding every year. So when we first started, you know, almost 5 years ago, we really focused on part-time population, right? The hourly population. And when you really dig in to the part-time population, depending on who you're talking to, they have different ideas, right? So when you talk to parents, you know, like I've got two kids that are, 18 and 24 now, and they've just entered the workforce, or my oldest has entered the workforce. Now my idea of part-time has changed, because when he was in high school, I was thinking, oh, part-time employees, they're high school kids or college kids, right? Well, the reality is you have economic and non-economic. And so, the non-economic population it's huge. And, in this population where you have people that they may have retired as a teacher, but guess what? That teacher, their health benefits only, they have huge deductibles. They can't go to an urgent care without paying $300, right? So, and they can't afford it because they're on a pension. You've got a retired military, stuff like that. And those are the non-economic where, or I have a spouse that has health insurance.
Yes.
And then, so they're looking for something to supplement that, right? And so we found this niche where we actually can supplement that. But then you've got the economic, which are, that person's typically working 2 to 3 jobs, trying to support their family on an hourly, wage of $8 to $12 an hour. And they have zero access to healthcare. And so we started there. And then what we've really evolved into is we have, we've seen this trend where if I'm a hourly full-time worker, let's say I'm making $15 to $25 an hour, which sounds like a lot, but they're not participating in major medical, even though they're offered major medical. And the reason is they can't afford it.
Yeah.
If I have a $3,500 deductible and I have $100 in my bank account, guess what? I'm functionally uninsured. I cannot go see the doctor because I can't afford it. So what we found is we've morphed as a company to serve really this population that can't afford medical insurance. And that population continues to grow every year. So, we have a lot of job security moving forward because it's just really nothing has changed, right? I think I read this morning that the average on the exchange, the average major medical policy went down 1%, right? It went down from $456 to $450.
Yes.
Well, God bless them, but there's a lot of people that can't afford that. So, yes. So what we did was we built a product that really, we looked at the CDC data.
Yep.
And we said, okay, where's the bulk of the care? And so the bulk of the care really in two areas under the age of 65. So you have physician services. So I'm sick. I need to go see a physician. Great. Right. And then the other part is accident related injury, right? Accidents, huge cost, right? If I break a bone, even if I sprain an ankle, the costs go up. So what we did was we created a what you call a fixed indemnity. So we pay out a certain amount.
Yeah.
And then also included an accident medical expense. So our accident medical expense is $5,000. So $0 deductible, we pay up to $5,000 for an injury, which is significant because the average cost of an injury is just under $4,000. So then what we did was we said, all right, since we're providing a fixed amount, let's make sure that we have a provider network that is suited for that population. So I'm not sure if you've seen urgent cares and retail clinics popping up, CVS MinuteClinic.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Right. You see these urgent cares everywhere now. Well, they're awesome. That's where me and my family, we've gone to urgent cares for years. And so the reason they're popular is for a couple of reasons. First off, the hours of operation, 7 days a week, they're open from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., right? Their services, they have on-site x-ray, on-site lab, they have physicians on staff. And then the other big thing is the average time to check in to check out in an urgent care across the United States is 60 minutes.
Yeah.
The last time I went to a primary care doctor, which was probably about 7 years ago, I had the very first appointment because I had a busy day. They didn't get me out of there until 11 o'clock. The doctor didn't see me until 10:30, right? So the problem is, people, if I'm an hourly worker, guess what? I can't miss a day of work to do that. Yeah. So now I can go after work, right? Yes. Or I can go on Saturday or Sunday. And so we created this provider network that is a $25 copay, no balance bill, right? When was the last time you heard no balance bill? Never, right? Never. Never in the health. And so with us, what we do is we have an agreement with that provider that when you walk in the door, any service rendered under the roof of that urgent care or retail clinic is covered with a $25 copay. So by doing that, we remove the fear of somebody going into the urgent care to get care because, you know, their fear, and by the way, rightfully so, is that they would get a balanced bill, right? And how I came up with this concept was it happened to me. I'm very familiar with this space. So I had a back issue, and first time it ever happened to me, my back froze up. So I went into this urgent care and I said, hey, I need, I need something. And I had one of the major carriers at the time, it was a $75 copay. And I said, but what's the global fee? And they said, oh, it's $150. So I paid the whole amount. They went in, they took an X-ray of my neck. They thought they saw a bone spur, So they said, you must have a irritated nerve root. So they gave me two injections, a muscle relaxer and an anti-inflammatory. 3 weeks later, I get an $800 balance bill. They were in network. I call them up and I said, why am I getting an $800 balance bill? Well, we had carve outs. And this is the ugly truth and malaligned incentives in healthcare. So because everybody has a $5,000 deductible now, the insurance carriers don't care about contracting for the services under that $5,000. So as a provider, now I'm incentivized to say, well, we'll contract with you for $150, but XYZ PDQ isn't included. Yeah. And then they charge me $800. Well, knowing that, so I negotiated it down to $70. Yeah. But the problem is majority of people will not do that.
And again, that's one of the problems. And I think we've all got stories of things that happen where you're forced into a situation where you've got to go to urgent care, whether it's the kid's fallen off his bike or something. And you know you're at their mercy because there is no one you can speak to. You have no idea what the bill is. It comes from a random number generator, it seems.
Yep.
And there's no one you can contact. There's no accountability. So unless you have this sort of intricate knowledge, the system and how it works, there's no way that you can actually, counter that. But let's go back a bit, because what you've created is this sort of massive machine with all of these moving parts. You've got insurance on one side, you've got the providers on the other side, you've got the policy that you're creating, the market that you're serving. What are the steps? How did you gain the knowledge to be able to sort of put these types of this program together? Let's wind the clock back a bit and tell me.
Background.
So I'm just going to go and turn my phone off while you're doing that. Sorry.
Yeah, no, not a problem at all. So my background is in healthcare. I started off in the military as what you call a scrub tech, which was assisting surgeons during surgery. And I worked at the Air Force's largest medical facility, which is Wilford Hall in San Antonio. So I gained a lot of medical knowledge there. And when I left the military, I was with Johnson & Johnson, then Stryker Orthopedics, and we sold orthopedic implants, total hips, total knees, trauma, spine products. And so I've been in the operating room my whole career. And so probably, 7 years ago, one of my best friends from Stryker, he called me up and he took over as a CEO of this startup. And it was basically what they had done was they created access for large self-funded employers for surgical bundles.
Yes.
And so, which was right up my alley.
Yeah.
And so I went on with him and as a COO, and we turned that business around and sold it.
Fantastic.
We sold it. I want to say 11 months after we joined.
Yes.
And so we, it was a quick turnaround, but it was great. And that business is still thriving today. Well, when we sold it, it was my first entry into really health benefits.
Yes.
And I really saw a huge opportunity for improvement, right?
Yes.
When I look at my prior industry, orthopedic sales and orthopedic industry, there's micro improvements to make, but in health benefits, you can make huge strides and improvements, and people are willing to listen. And so that's how I really got into the health benefit space. And then, so what I did then was I just, I talked to a lot of people, really bounce stuff off. I'm a constant learner, which I think is really important as an entrepreneur, because we need to look at not only our own business, but how our business relates to other businesses, right? What's going on in the space. So I met the right people and really learned the insurance industry, got my insurance license, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. Right. And again, I think that's the key to it, because the piece that seems like a bit of a country club, if I can use that expression, is the insurance industry. So in other words, by invitation only, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. It is a very tight knit group.
Because they don't want someone like you coming along and upsetting the apple cart and using the horrible D word, the disruption word, you know. So how was that? How did you find, because all of these things that you do have to be funded.
Yeah. Money, oh, absolutely.
You know, so.
Well, so great question, because it is, especially as an outsider coming in, you know, what my suggestion to any other entrepreneur out there is, if you're an outsider going in as a disruptor into an industry, really you need to bring some internal industry, especially on the sales side, somebody that has a lot of credibility. And that's what we did. We brought our president in, Russell Huber, who, you know, just high quality individual that has a great reputation in this space. And so when people saw him join an array team, you know, they, hey, so this must not be too bad. It makes sense, right? And then the other thing is where I think a lot of companies that are disruptors, they focus so much on the disruption as opposed to creating value for all parties involved. And so, you know, when you look at a negotiation, right, there's got to be a win for both sides, right? It's got to either be as painful for both sides, or, you know, it's got to be equal. Otherwise, people leave the table upset, right? And so with us, what we've done is we've really made it a win-win. And so you've got to show your value every day, and that's what we do. And we know that we're disrupting an industry, but we also know that we're guests in this industry, and that we need to work with the brokerage community, and that's what we do.
I'd like to explore that in a moment, but just to make it clear, you're adding to the industry, so you're not taking away. What you're doing is you're providing access to healthcare to a group of people that probably wouldn't be purchases anyway. So you're actually expanding the market.
Very well said. Yeah, you are exactly right. And so what that does for the brokers is, because a lot of these, you know, when we first started out in the part-time space, a lot of these employers were trying to figure out what's a good alternative for a part-time population.
Yeah.
And when they were able to bring in Hooray, then they were like, oh, we look really good right now. And you know, a lot of the brokers that we work with don't make any more money on our product because they're consultants.
Yeah.
So they're getting a fixed fee anyway, which is good and bad sometimes, right? Because some of the consultants, you know, they're like, hey, if it ain't broken, we don't need to fix it, right?
Yes.
So we're not doing anything. But what's nice is the majority of them are, hey, look, we're in it for the employer. It's a clear differentiator for us. And so, you're spot on.
But I think that's important, because coming back to the point that we were talking about before, where breaking into industries, I mean, everybody, entrepreneurs love the sort of concept of disrupting, you know, because they're rebels without a tie or
right.
you know, something like
right.
that. But actually all that happens is that it just generally denotes a lack of understanding of how the industry works, because, you know, disrupting something is actually incredibly difficult. What you're doing, as I said, is adding. So did you find that it took a while for the machine to sort of start before people appreciated what you were doing? And then did you get a lot of support from the existing structure, the existing sort of insurance and healthcare community? Or is it a continual uphill battle?
Well, so we had a couple start, stop, restart, stop, because we were really, you know, getting the right people engaged, getting the right, identifying the right clients. And so once we got the right people, the broker community is very supportive. And so we continue to push uphill, right? Because it's a lot of times, believe it or not, it's the employers that, you know, why do we need to offer our part-time population or worry about this population? We're worried, you know, and I'll give you an example. One of the nation's largest retailers, 20% of their population is full-time.
Yeah.
80% of it's part-time. Just think about that.
Yeah.
Nation's largest retailers, okay? And they don't offer any benefits. They don't offer zero access to benefits for those people in the pandemic. So that's where the uphill battle is getting them to buy in, because they're so worried about 401k and you know, hey, how are we going to, you know, how are we going to manage our self-funded plan for our full-timers and blah, 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 right? They're not worried about the part-timers, but yet right now, you know, they're at a loss, right? We're trying to recruit, we're trying to get this and this done. So
at the moment, you're leveraging existing industry counterparties, you know, the existing insurance companies, and you were talking about the growth in urgent care. Do you see the possibility of you creating an entirely standalone end-to-end business where you can create your own insurance side, you can create your own branded, you know, healthcare? You know, are you aiming to bring more and more in-house so you have more control? Does that lead you to growth, or is growth going to come from continuing to leverage the existing industry participants?
Yeah, it's going to continue to grow expand the where we're at today, which is the broker distribution, because the broker distribution controls, you know, 99% of all the corporate benefits, right? I think where I see us getting really changing is selling or getting more into the conversation with the C-level suite, which is really the CFOs, where CFOs make decisions based on rational numbers, right? There's no emotion in it. It's, hey, this is a half a basis point to cover this, to do this, but it eliminates, you know, turnover costs over here. It eliminates workers' comp claims on Monday, right? Most people don't realize that 90% of the workers' comp claims come in on Monday morning.
Yeah.
Right. You know, and why is that? Because I don't have health insurance. Oh my gosh, I just twisted my ankle. It didn't happen on the soccer pitch this weekend. Yeah. It happened as soon as I walked into, you know, the Target store, right?
Yes.
So they own that patient for the rest of their life at that point, right? So I think, you know, for us, our ultimate goal is to get to where we're an industry standard for, you know, the part-time hourly population, because our goal is to expand access to healthcare, period. Yes. That's what we want. And if we get there, that's a win for everybody, because how we have our program set up with, you know, we have a mobile app. We have every year, we actually, by the way, I just sent an email out earlier today. We've been in business almost 5 years now. We have not had a price increase in 5 years. As a matter of fact, prices have gone lower.
Yeah.
And we add more benefits every year. And so, you know, our goal is to get people affordable access to care, right? We want them to go in when they're sick. We want them to go in when their kids are sick, right? The last thing we ever want anybody to do is compromise the health of their children, you know, because of, you know, some perverted financial incentive, right?
Yeah.
So the industry as a whole, you know, you could, from a disruption standpoint, you know, a lot of people think, hey, cut out the broker, go directly to you know, employer. You know, it's really a no-win situation in that regard, because employers don't make decisions without their consultants.
Yes.
Period. And so it's better to be on the side of the consultant that is in the room every day, working with them on their building their strategy, and getting the broker involved in showing your idea. So that's why we're broker first, because our ultimate goal isn't to disrupt, just to disrupt. Our ultimate goal is really to expand the access to care for the people that need it.
I think that's a very important point that you've made, because you've got two sides of the equation. You've got the product that you've created, which serves an urgent need from an underserved population. So you're creating something that is a solution to a problem, and that's on one side. And this is the sort of thing that entrepreneurs try and do every day, which is try and find a solution for a problem that hasn't been solved before, because therein lies the seed of a business. But I think what you're doing is clearly, you know, absolutely the right approach, and, you know, very smart, which is to say, well, let's use the existing distribution mechanisms, the brokers. Let's not try and upset that, because we're not going to get anywhere. And, you know, time and time again, we come across, you know, businesses that start and want to try and create everything. So what led you to that decision? Because you've got, as I said, on one side, the product, but were you, now you've got this, did you feel this sort of sense of, right, okay, you guys, you've, you know, we've got this product now, so get out of my way. You have, you've had a chance to do this. We've got this, and we don't want to work with you because you're too stick in the mud and
right.
Have your chance.
Yeah.
Did you start like that and then thing. Hang on a second, you know.
Yeah, what's funny is that we started in the sense that we did go direct to employers a lot. We had, we worked with small employers. We worked with large. We had, you know, what we found was it just doesn't go anywhere without the broker. And so when we brought in our new investors, the first thing they said, Will Galling is one of them. Well, he said, Shane, we got to be a broker first mentality. We got to go through the brokers. That's it.
Yes.
You got to go through them, and that's how you're going to be successful. And he was 100% right. And that's when we brought in Russell. And, you know, I've got a really good board of directors, a really good group of investors that understand the space. And, you know, I think that, again, that's what I was saying earlier is as entrepreneurs, sometimes, you know, you're focused more on the disruption than the actual value that you're bringing, right? And so we bring incredible value to the broker, to the employer, to our clients. And so, you know, why not use them, right? I mean, as in distribute through them, not use.
Yeah, but you're very calm and collected and, you know, very, you know, delivering in a very sort of, you know, measured way. I can imagine, though, behind the scenes in the early days, there were some, you know, heavy, solid objects thrown at walls as you were, you know, coming up against, on one side, the innovation. It's like the immovable object meets the irresistible force.
Yeah.
So what sort of, you know, how many windows have you broken over the last few years, you know?
Yeah, there's been quite a few things thrown for sure. I mean, you know, what's interesting about this business is you, and I'm sure it's the same as in any business, but I think startups, especially guys like myself that weren't from the industry, I just, you know, I attracted all of the worthless human beings in this business to come put their arm around me. I can help you do this. I can do this. And that was probably the most frustrating part of the business is where you spend all this time and energy and money and have these expectations of success. And then you just come to find out nothing, right? Just nothing. It's all vapor.
Yes.
So, you know, now I am very callous.
Yes.
Well, I am, before we do anything, it's, you're putting your money in front of us right now and you're making, you know, there's going to be some solid expectations before we do anything.
Yes.
And, you know, and I guess that's part of, you know, really part of life growing up. And so,
well, no, I think, again, it's really potentially a function of the industry itself, because there are so many layers of obfuscation and darkness and, you know, areas where you can make a living, you know, by playing the shell game, really, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So you sort of burst through that. And in terms of the design of the product, because again, the tensions that you have within healthcare, it's very similar to sort of tensions between, you know, it's like an artist to a certain extent. On one side, you want to create art unfettered that is just allowing your soul to express itself. But on the other side, you've got to eat.
Right.
And the medical profession, people do this because it's a profession, because they love. I mean, when you were standing in the, you know, in the theaters, when you're in the Air Force, you don't do that because you think, God, I'm getting paid this month. You do it because you love it, because it's something that you, it's under your skin, metaphorically, and probably actually as well. Yes.
Right.
You know, so again, what did you come across? Do you come across people within your industry that have that passion? Or is it just numbers and machinery?
Oh, no, we absolutely have wonderful groups that we work with. There's, I can honestly say I have been so impressed with the breadth of the talent in this industry. You know, there, when I first started, I was really working kind of with the bottom feeders.
Yes.
And, you know, the people that are, you know, the ones that you visualize in your head when you think of insurance. But over the last couple of years, we've really worked with some great organizations at, you know, Holmes Murphy, at Lockton, at Gallagher. You know, they're, you know, Aon, Willis Towers, they're just really smart people, very passionate about the industry, what they do, incredibly professional. And it's not an easy job. I'll tell you, it's not an easy job at all. It's very complex. And when you're working with a very, it's a hard industry because you're dealing with people's health, right? And, but yet you've got a financial component, that a fiduciary responsibility as a business, right? But then you have, you know, the human component of it, which is your people. And so there's a fine balance on what you can do. And, you know, the frustrating thing is the majority of the care goes to a very small section of the population. And, you know, you can't discriminate. And, but, you know, and they just gladly take all of this care because they don't want to take care of themselves.
Yes. And as part of the process, did you study, I mean, coming from England, we have the National Health Service, which is, say, government funded, but it's nationalized. So in other words, there's no, and there are layers of private health. Did you have any real moments when you thought, hang on a second, this could really work here? So things where you really could absolutely turn the business on its head, but sort of pulled back. Is that something that we've got lined up for the future, do you think?
Oh, absolutely. You know, there's so many things that we can do, engaging more telemedicine from a managing of, you know, diabetes and other disease states that, you know, right now you have to go see a primary care physician, you have to see a face-to-face, but being able to engage higher use of telemedicine with those diseases and the management from an electronic standpoint and a coordination of labs. And because, you know, one of the things that we see, you know, and have seen for years is, you know, you may go see a physician that's in network and then they send your lab to an out of network lab. You just paid $65 for a physician visit, but you paid $1,000 for labs that should have cost $50, right? So I think when we look at that coordination of care, you know, from a technology standpoint, us using AI, working with, we've got a potential partner to do some where on our mobile app, you're literally able to self-diagnose and get you to the appropriate level of care to an in-network provider, right? Stuff like that, you know, we have a lot up our sleeve moving in the future, and we're really excited. There's a ton of opportunity to really create some new products, insurance products that allow deeper access to care, especially on the surgical side where, you know, working with, you know, our old company in the past that we had in the past with the surgical bundles, being able to work with them, you know, where we're getting discounted rates and there's a coordination where they can, and a concierge that they can get you the surgery and then we can pay it on the back end through the empty product. So.
And I guess, is that innovation? That's the thing. Is that what drives you more than anything? The fact that this business is working and yet we can grow it here and we can add that product.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, that's what, you know, that's what keeps us going, right? Is the ability every year we improve every year. And that's not from a, you know, a revenue or a life standpoint. What it is, we're talking every year we look at, the question is, not how we add more costs, but how do we take out costs and how do we improve our services, right? And that's what drives us. And that's, you know, we have, I've got the best leadership team I've ever had in my 30 plus years. And
but that takes some doing as well. Just people and just, why would I join your startup? You know, is the question that sort of.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And it's, you know, I've got three team members. Three. That were with me at our last company that came over. And you know, it's fun to come to work. It's fun to, you know, when you know, because you're going to, especially in a startup, you're going to have your ups and downs. You are going to fail more than you win. You just hope they're big enough, right? And so, it's, you know.
It's great. And it is great. I mean, anything that we can do to help these underserved populations, and it does sound trite, but when you're in it, when you see that you are doing something that benefits thousands and thousands of people in a way that's meaningful. In other words, the fact that they now have something that they couldn't have, you know, there's a certain amount of energy that provides as well, I would have thought.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's, you know, at the end of the day, you know, we look at review, we get our review. So when we renew our clients, we ask our clients, our members, the employees to give reviews. And, you know, it's not uncommon for us to literally get a review that says, I love Hooray Health. Thank you so much. You know, and during COVID, you know, we got a lot of notes where they said, hey, it covered everything. I paid $25.
I was going to say, I mean, COVID must have had a massive impact on adoption and usage and growth.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was, you know, we actually offered free telemedicine to some of our clients that, you know, I mean, we did a lot of stuff. You know, COVID was really roll up your sleeves and, you know, how do you, you know, let's figure everything out in the end, but, you know, let's just give people access to care, what they need. And so we did that. You know, it's, I think when you put, your clients, your, you know, your employees and the members first, you're always going to win, right? As long as you're always asking that question, how do we improve? How do we get better every day? You know, with our group, there's no, hey, I'm the CEO.
Yes.
You're under me. Nobody can challenge. I mean, it's open forum with us. It's, that's the dumbest idea I've ever heard. You don't understand this. This is what we got to do, right?
Yes.
And it's great. And that's how I want it. And
it sounds like a great place. And it sounds like once you have that traction, you have that success, success breeds success, doesn't it? It gives you that momentum, it gives you the wings in your feet.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it gives you that swagger, right?
Yeah.
So in the beginning, you start with the swagger, and then you get beat down, and then you're limping around for a while, and then you get your swagger back. So yes.
That's fabulous. Well, that's talking of swaggers, I'm going to change gear now. There you go. Two completely disassociated metaphors. But I'm going to ask you my Hooked on Startups quick fire questionnaire now.
All right.
So are you ready? Question number one, Shane Foss, what is your favorite word?
My favorite word, it is positivity.
And question number two, what is your least favorite word?
Can't.
Yes. Number three, what are you most excited about right now?
Most excited about the fact that our business is doing well and that our team is going to be growing in the next year.
Fantastic. And number four, what turns you off right now?
Employers that are forgetting COVID already.
Yes.
Well, you know, I mean, we don't. Yeah. Employers that are putting off adding benefits to the part-time population.
Amazing, isn't it? Question number five, what sound or noise do you love?
Sound of a river.
And number six, what sound or noise do you hate?
Car horn.
Which one? Car horn, yeah.
Car horn, yeah.
Number seven, what is your favorite curse word? And feel free to let loose or plead the fifth. Entirely up to you.
Fuck.
Yes. I can see it. There are so many different ways. I'm going to write a book about fuck, I think.
Exactly.
You know, question number eight, what profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Would I like to attempt? I would love to attempt to be a professional fly fisherman. Would be a professional fly fishing guide would probably be it.
Yes. So, I can see the joy in that. Question number nine, what profession would you not like to attempt?
I would not want to be the president of the United States.
Right now, yes. A whole new subject. And question number 10, the final question. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Heaven does exist, and I would love to hear him say, you did good in life, you meant well, come on in.
Fantastic. Shane, it's been such a pleasure having you on. My final question, how do people find out more about you, about Hooray Health, about how to get involved in something and make possible which they thought possibly?
You can contact us at hooray health.com, which is HOORAY health.com. There's contact us button down there. You can call our 800 number as well. And then you can find me on LinkedIn. If you, any of your listeners ever want to connect and talk about startups, I can write my own book at this
point. That's right. Brilliant. Well, it's been such a pleasure having you on. Thank you so much. And I'll make sure that we'll put all of that information in the notes and, you know, can't wait to stay in touch and follow your progress. Thanks.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Matthew. I really appreciate the opportunity. Really enjoyed it.